Welcome to the Molding Private Practice Show, where we help healthcare practitioners in private practice keep true to their purpose and build a life of mastery by providing the knowledge, skills, and tools to bring their dreams to life. In this episode of the show, we speak to Milani Niemand about being an occupational therapist and everything private practice management related. Milani Niemand, welcome to the show. So we're so glad to have you on board and talking about being an OT and private practice and all that good stuff. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you very much, Oliver, and thank you for inviting me.
It's always a pleasure. I mean, I love this part, you know, like speaking to practitioners, because, I mean, what we get out of that is, you know, an amazing insight in terms of, you know, how you became a practitioner and, you know, some of your challenges and, you know, and also, I mean, it's a really good resource, you know, for any aspiring, you know, OTs and stuff like that. So, so thanks so much for doing this. But I do want to ask, how did you actually come across us? And how did you get invited to the show is maybe the question.
Yes, so I have been utilizing your software, your practice management software, which has really been a great help for me. And it's through that you invited me to be on the show. And then I realized about all the other great talks you've been doing. And I'm happy to see all the other things that you've been doing there as well.
Okay, great. I mean, I think it's always a pleasure. I think the team always just sends out the messages. And you know what I've been really intrigued about is, like, in the last, I suppose COVID started it, like you said before we started the show, but you know, it's opened up all these avenues. And I think, you know, when this idea started in my head as well of doing the shows, I thought, would we be able to get practitioners? And like I mentioned, you know, we've got a backlog of like 4 weeks, and we've got, you know, episodes already booked up all the way until the end of December. And that's interesting, hey, like, you know, the I would say willingness, but also like enthusiasm from practitioners, because there's obviously a need to say, you know, to have that message out. So I thought, yes, that's interesting. Yes.
I was thinking the same thing. I think we all are here actually because we want to help people in some way. And if it is to get the message out, excuse me, got a frog in my throat. If it's getting the message out to more people, it really is, we're happy to do that. It really is a good feeling to know that we can get some more information out there, not only to teach other professionals, but the parents and the teachers and aspiring occupational therapists, for example. That's who we would love to reach. So no, it's really, I can see why people do agree to that, because it's definitely something that excites us to be able to share the information.
So also very interesting for me, you know, when practitioners, because you know, in our managed service product, we would, you know, obviously do the website for clients. And whenever we came to like articles, you know, like, and we would tell the practitioners, you know, like, you want to write articles because it keeps you relevant and, you know, it's good for SEO. And they would like, no, but I can't write. And
yes.
I'm like thinking, all of our clients have like master's level. Yes. And you know, it's no, they can't be right. And we would say, no, but you do it all the time. You know, when a parent calls you and they say, you know, like, you know, my child is struggling with writing and I heard that you specialize in dysgraphia. What do you say? Because you're on a call for like an hour easily, you know, and but you talk to them quite easily. Now it's just taking that and putting it into words. And, you know, then they're like, oh, okay, yeah, probably I can do that. Hey,
it's incredibly hard to get so many thoughts onto paper. And it's actually quite ironic that you would ask that question with our topic being dysgraphia, because to be able to get all of these racing thoughts, all of this information you have, to organize them and put them down on paper in a visually pleasing way that you feel summarizes everything that you wanted to say, is actually quite difficult when there's so much that you want to say. So if there's little about the topic, it's much easier to write it down, but if you've got so much that you want to say about it, it's much harder to get that into a way that's organized well. And that's part of the difficulty with dysgraphia as well, is they've got these, all of these words, all of these thoughts, and it's hard to organize those words and thoughts into a way that is visually pleasing, but also makes sense and summarizes exactly what they wanted to say.
The other thing I've been fascinated with is the journeys of practitioners, you know, because I mean, like, and I think as everyone in the world, I mean, it doesn't matter what the world population gets to, but everyone has their unique story. And I always am fascinated how practitioners become the practitioner they are, you know, like a young Milani, did you want to become an OT? I mean, is that what you wanted to do? Or is it something you stumbled across?
It's a very interesting question. I've asked myself that question many times before, because and when I say many times before, it's just, how was I so lucky to find this profession? Because occupational therapy was not what I thought it was going to be, because it is so hard to define what we do. And it is so broad what we do. So if you were, when I started studying, I learned so much about what it was. And by the time I finished 4 years later, I still didn't know what it was because we had so much things that we were able to do. And it took me a couple of years into practice to realizing how to define what we do. And as a standard 9 child, there was no way I knew exactly what I was getting into, because that is the time I had to decide what I want to apply for university. And it really is just by grace from above that I chose a direction that works for me, because it is a direction that can go into many ways. And I think that is why I chose occupational therapy, because I was a bit indecisive about what I want to do, which is pretty normal for a standard 9 child. Mm-hmm. And occupational therapy provided many options and many avenues for me. I did not have to decide I'm going to only work with this type of population, or I'm only going to work in this type of setting. So when I decided to do it, I thought, oh, I want to work with children, because I myself was still a child at that stage, so I felt comfortable with working with children. And I thought, yes, that's what I'm going to do, is I'm going to work with children. And after my studies, when I started working with adults, I realized, oh, this is much better than I thought it was going to be. I actually enjoy that, because I myself have gotten older and it was more comfortable for me to work with them as well. So I did want to do OT, but I kind of heard about OT by chance, because it was a far long family member of mine that was an OT in America working with hands. And we had one holiday together that she one evening explained to me what she did. And I thought, oh, that sounds lovely. In later years, I realized that what she explained to me and what I understood from what she explained to me was completely different, because it's so hard to define in just one conversation. But that set the passion out for me. And the more I learned about it after that, helped me to realize that, yes, this is the direction that I want to go. I grew up in a small town. We didn't even have an occupational therapist. When I said I want to do it, everybody around me had to go and find out what is occupational therapy. They didn't know what it is either. So it is really one of those things that I'm very grateful for, that I got to know about the profession early on to be able to do that, choose that direction.
Yeah, I think every practitioner that we've had on, whether they've been on the show or not, I mean, always answers that way. And for me, that is amazing as well. You know, picking something where this is your passion, you know, this is like, you know, because I'm a firm believer in that, you know, if it's not, you know, if it doesn't seem like work, then, you know, it's like almost like you never retire, you know. Yes. And, you know, so I'm so... you know, I would love our kids, you know, to find their own calling like with that. But I haven't met a practitioner as yet that said actually they don't want to be that practitioner. You know, we've met a few that changed their mind along the way. You know, for some reason, lots of practitioners always start off trying to become a pediatrician. I think I've had that a lot, you know, saying, I want to become a doctor, I want to work with children. And then I went past the OT room, and they were doing such cool stuff, you know, making, you know, devices and stuff like that. And I thought, that's fun, and I wanted to do that. But, you know, and like with yourself, you know, found that calling much earlier than that. But amazing stuff. Yeah. And once you made up your mind, or once you thought, okay, that's my path, was it quite an easy journey to get into the program?
It actually wasn't. So like I said, in my grade 11 year, the standard 9 year, I had to apply for it already because you use those marks, if I remember correctly now. Yep. And then I actually didn't get into my first year. So, and then I was like, oh, devastated, because my heart was set on doing this. And now I had to choose my second or third or fourth or fifth option, and I didn't want to do any of those. So I ended up committing to, I really do still want to do this. So I said, I'm going to go into a science degree route, because that is going to help my reapplication for it. So I did my first year BSc in life sciences, which I absolutely loved, because it had all the subjects that correlated with occupational therapy, but it was just that next level of science and research into that, which I find myself a lot of times thinking back on. The more research depth of that science degree really helped set my way of thinking into occupational therapy as well, because it was more in-depth chemistry, more in-depth biology, all of those things. And so after that year, then I finally did get into my first year of occupational therapy. That year that I was reapplying for it, I had one of my friends in the residence with me. She was doing occupational therapy, and I took her notebooks and I started just looking through it. Is this really still the direction that I want to go? Am I still committed to my application for it? And that was the first time that I actually saw the full scope of occupational therapy. I did not realize what all the things is that we can do. And it actually just fueled my passion for it. So I'm actually quite grateful for that year, because it definitely made me see that, yes, I do want to do this. This is not just about being lucky for getting in. This really is something that I want to work hard towards achieving, to get into being able to do that.
Well done.
And, yes, yeah. And then I started the course, and the course itself is actually quite intense. I think in our first year, we started off, I'm talking under correction, we had about 35 in our class. I was at Stellenbosch, and unfortunately we do have, you get a few dropouts during the years, because you're not allowed to even miss one subject. You've got to pass all your subjects. There's no subject that you can redo the next year. And we ended up with, in the 20s, I think it was in our final year, in our fourth year. So, and we got a couple of them that redid from the previous year as well. So it is really a tough course, not only physically but emotionally as well, because you really put yourself out there. You put yourself into very uncomfortable situations. You have to go into the adult psychiatry and child psychiatry. You have to go into the burns units. You have to go into the amputees. You have to do the pediatrics, and you have to learn about all of those things. And you put out there, and then you've got to start doing your thing, and you feel like you've got no idea what you're doing, and you've just got to you've just got to learn to cope and carry on. So it's emotionally quite taxing, but definitely worth the achievement of finishing, completing.
No, I agree. And I think that's why, I mean, like, you know, we work with the clients we do as well. Because I think, you know, I think in our simplistic mind, you know, if we help them, you know, like they're helping other people, you know, in some way we tied to that good karma, you know. So, yeah. But yeah, I think firstly, well done for that, you know, and secondly, I mean, it shows the tenacity, you know, and I think for anyone listening to this, you know, like, I think that's life, eh? You never, you know, if it was just like linear and you just got everything you wanted, I mean, yes, very few people are like that. But, you know, if you get a stumble or an obstacle, you know, just figure out how you can just walk around it or over it or whatever, you know, just to carry on that path. Because it is not going to be, especially with, and I think that's the point I'd always try to make with these episodes, is that there's limited numbers, whether that's dietetics or, you know, like it's OTs, physios, it's limited numbers across the universities. Not every university, you know, like has the programs. So you really have to, you know, you're fortunate if you get it on the first time, and, you know, that's pretty being grateful. That's even without the hard work of the 4 years or 5 years. But, that story.
When you are a practitioner, you're very appreciative of high standards, because just one practitioner who does not give a good image to the occupation does a lot of damage, even though they've got nothing to do with the other professional. That's what people, they expect everybody to be the same, and that's what they need to achieve with the universities. They need to have the same level of standards that they want people to be able to achieve. And like you said, that tenacity, that perseverance, it brought that out of me to make me realize I can persevere in this. And it also makes you appreciate your achievement even more.
I agree. And community service, was that a good experience?
Yes. So a lot of mixed feelings about that, because there's good and bad things about it. So I had a bit of a different course when it comes to that. Immediately after studying, I first went to England, and then I worked there in the hospitals. And then when I came back to South Africa, then I did my community service here. And then I was based in Khayelitsha in one of their clinics.
Okay.
And I was the only, I basically almost started the occupational therapy department in a clinic, and I had a lot of battles trying to get things done there. And you've got so much red tape, and you're alone, and yet working in, I was fortunate to have some working experience before that, but it did not transfer much to the clinic where I was. So I was basically starting from scratch as well. And it's a very good experience for me to, it was for me to be able to be in the community and really live with the troubles they are living with. So it brought a lot of compassion for me about what the battles there are that I did not fully grasp before that. But I must say, it was for me bad to be alone, because you do want to grow your profession. You do want to grow your experience. So I would have loved being stationed somewhere where there was a senior occupational therapist with me. We were part of a group. All the clinics were part of a group. So yes, we could meet the others and see them, but still, when it came to the actual work you're doing, you're alone again. So so that is the part that I think there's been a lot of changes when it comes to that in terms of community service years. But again, it was a good experience in tenacity and perseverance and problem solving, because you don't have somebody you can ask. You've got to do this on your own. And a lot of times I realized I know much more than I think I know. And when you are working alongside other professionals there, other nurses, nursing staff or doctors, it made you realize our training is actually very good, and we are part of the package, and we already have so much to offer, even if it's my first year out of university. So yes, like I said, there was good and bad things, but eventually I'm very grateful that they did do the community service here for our South African practitioners, because I think for us it really makes a big difference to start your career off that way.
I think so as well. I mean, again, mixed, you know, kind of responses. But I think the one thing that always comes out clear is the self-development aspects, you know, like, you know, how you grew in that. I think for the first time, you know, most people, you know, all practitioners hit that bureaucracy level, you know, that most people have to deal with. But yeah, I think. And then if you're just looking at the patients, like you're saying, you know, normally those posts are in rural communities and stuff like that, you know, you're seeing real people with real problems and, you know, trying to make some level of small difference. Must be amazing and rewarding.
The little you do goes so far. That was a very good experience to see that just a little bit that you do makes such a big impact, because the need is so big. Unfortunately, it comes to a feeling of you can't help everybody, but at least you know that the little that you can do does have an impact.
Yeah, and I think your story is slightly different to some of the others we've had because, I mean, obviously you worked before that, so you knew what, you know, proper money is, especially being in the UK, you know, like comparing it to South Africa. But, you know, for many of the practitioners, you know, this is their first real job, you know, where they're getting like real money, and that's already like a bonus, you know, being with other, you know, practitioners, you know, young, you know, earning a salary must be cool as well.
Yes, definitely. And especially it makes you realize that There's many rewards working in government. So working for the government position compared to working for private practice position. And because before that, I would have never considered staying in a government position because I thought about, or I only saw all the difficulties they had. But being there and realizing, okay, we are compensated for the difficult environment that you work in and all the challenges you have. Mm. And it really, if you decide to stay in government, there's a long-term reward system that really is very big to your benefit.
Mm, yeah. You mentioned the magic words there, though, private practice. Was it an easy transition? Did you go straight into private practice or did you work?
I think I've had quite an interesting road to my career, a little different, I think, to most, because I first started in the UK and then I came back. I did a couple of months where I volunteered in Western Cape rehab as well, and rehab center as well. And then I had to make the decision, am I going to stay in the government and work on that kind of rewards over time, which is very rewarding, or am I going to change now? And I always knew that one of the reasons I chose my occupation is because my family is priority for me as well. And I wanted to be an occupational therapist so that I can also utilize that information for my own kids and family. And I knew it was going to be very hard for me personally to work full time and have my kids at home. So I knew in the future I wanted to work part-time. At that time, there were no possible part-time jobs in the government that I knew of, could find out about of. So I made the decision, let me try and work towards something that I can make the working hours fit my home life. And that's why I started to go into private. And then I started in with adults. So I started with rehab centers. I was in therapy in action in Stellenbosch, which is a back rehab center for a while. I was in, and after that, I got pregnant with my first child. So I had a break here and there with my second child. I had another break again. And in that period of a couple of years, I also did functional capacity evaluations. So I did the training for that. And then you would do a very intense evaluation of a client for purposes of insurance companies. And I absolutely loved it. I love that whole evaluation process and how you've got to be very specific and the research behind your standardized evaluations and the accuracy behind it and how you can get all of these different areas together to be able to comment on somebody's ability to go back to work or not. So I did that for a couple of years. I really loved it, but I was always missing that I want to then walk the path with them after that. Mm-hmm. I did this evaluation and now I'm leaving them. And I don't, to this day, many of those, I don't know what happened to them after that because it's not my client. Mm. So it made me realize how I want to walk this path. And it was only after my own kids started going to school that I realized how absolutely fascinated I am with this schooling process and how kids develop. And being a mother myself, I realized the challenges you have as a parent and the challenges kids have and just the vast differences there are. And then I started locuming for other private practices while I was still doing my functional capacity evaluations as well. So by that time, I'd already started my own private practice. But it was a little bit here, a little bit there, and it was mixed. A little bit of my pediatric clients, a little bit of adult clients, which I loved. I loved working with adults. I loved working with kids. And what I realized over time is when you work with kids, you work with the parents too. So you work with the adults as well. And I absolutely loved supporting the adults through the difficulties that their kids have as well. So that eventually grew to me deciding, okay, I'm going to only do my own private practice now. Again, that slowly built up. And I would say I only formally decided this is my practice. I'm renting somewhere. I'm part of a GP and dentist setup in January 2020. And that was a few months before COVID hit. So it's been a slow start in terms of that. But that also fired my passions about the learning process kids have reading and writing, which made me realize I want more information on dyslexia. I want more information on dysgraphia. I'm not just settling for helping them with, how can I say, the developmental problem, and then they go to grade three. I want after that, I want to help the kids when they are older than that. And also it made me realize that that age of kid is what I love as well. I love the older kid who can really take ownership of what's going on, and I help them to empower them to go through this process as well. So in a very long answer to your question, the road to private practice has been a little bit here, a little bit there, and grabbing on experience in different settings, because even till today, I sometimes grab on the experience in my hospital days as to how do you, what is the priority of this client? What do they need? And how do you organize this? And so, yes, there's a, and especially, like I say, with the adults as well, being able to help and support and empower that parent as well. I'm not only here for the kid, I'm here for the parent as well, because they are the ones that have to see their child every day at home and help them through all of that as well. But yeah, it's starting the private practice was challenging, because now suddenly you've got very different hats that you need to put on. I've always only had my therapist hats. I can think of what the child needs, what else I need to do. But suddenly I had to now start a small business. And that was also quite a challenging road to start on. Fortunately, I am entrepreneur at heart as well. So that was for me part of the satisfaction of it as well, as managing this business as well. But that can be quite challenging if you're not somebody who likes to think in that way of managing this business and growing this business as well.
But hearing you speak, I think you're quite intentional about things, and I think that tenacity kind of comes through it. And I think that's what you need with private practice. You know, we've been working with many people, you know, even on the show. I think that's the one thing that comes up a lot is, you know, it's like, again, it's never linear. You know, private practice is a good example of that. And you mentioned magic words, which was hat, different hats, you know, on there. So I like that. We do have to start closing up. I know we're going to be out of time, but do I have to ask though, if anyone wants to become an OTE or they want to go into private practice, is there anything that you would tell them? You know, around this, you know, any like words of wisdom you wish someone told you, you know, at some point?
That's a hard one. What I can tell you is, and this was told to me, actually, I think I got good advice and I got good people. I did speak to people, but it really only sets in when you get there. One of the things is you really have to have a passion for what you are doing, because you get your job satisfaction is not only in remuneration. Yes, that's an important part of it. But unfortunately, OT is not one of the best paid professions out there. So you've got to know that why you're doing this is not only to be able to pay the bills. You also really have to get your job satisfaction from how you help people to be able to do that, and really decide if that is a passion for you to be able to help people, because it comes down to that. I remember in our very first class of OT, the lot of us were sitting there, and then the lecturer asked us, why do you want to study OT? And every single one of us said, we want to help people. And that's what you've got to remember along the way, because you will get your challenges. Some people are easier to help than others. And just remember that is why you're doing it. You want to help people. And but like I showed, you don't have to do only that. You can also find your satisfaction, like for me, managing small business or doing other ways. You can work in corporate environment as well. You can be in hospitals. It's a very versatile occupation. So find out about all the different settings there are. There are very different settings you can work in. Don't be limited to the one you know. Go find out all the other different ones, because there might be something that you didn't even realize we as OTs can work on. And also, we are quite versatile. We can create those settings where we want to be as well. So maybe you have got an interest or an idea of somewhere where you want to work in one day, and go with it. Believe in yourself and make it work for you.
I like that. I like how you said that, because it is that canvas. I think that's the one thing that comes up very strongly with OTs, because I think when we started working with OTs, I didn't know what an OT did until we started the software, actually. This is the first one. But I always had this idea in my mind that OTs worked with children. Yes. Until I started speaking to OTs, and there's some OTs that say, actually, I don't want to work with children at all. And that took me by surprise. The first time I heard it, I was like, that doesn't seem right. But, it's actually true. And I think with your career, it seems to be like a really good balance. You know, at the end, you could choose, actually, I want to do this now, which I think
is amazing. You can change your path. You can change your path. And I found that as I personally developed and my life situation changed, I realized that I'm passionate about a different area than I thought I would be.
But thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for your time. Thanks for everything you do. You know, we really appreciate it. I'm so glad that you decided you're going to be on the show. I know we had to reschedule a few times, but thanks again for doing it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Oliver. Appreciate it.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. As always, stay tuned and we'll speak to you in the next episode.